stand by. Well, good day, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS 10 Connectivity Enhancements in the IMS Connect API. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how IMS Connect and OTMA can help your business build application solutions to support growing business requirements. The speakers for today's teleconference are Jack Ioanna, Senior Developer in IMS Transaction Manager Development, David Cameron, Senior Developer in IMS Connect Development, and Kevin Flanagan, Advisor Engineer in IMS TMRA Development. And at this time, it is my pleasure to hand it over to our first speaker, Mr. Kevin Flanagan. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is a presentation on the IMS Connect API, and if you'll turn to slide number 4, we'll get started. My agenda for today is to give you a brief overview of the IMS Connect API, talking about the business value, a description and positioning of the API, and the prerequisites for the use of the API. We'll talk about design assumptions that went into the design of the API, restrictions with respect to how it can be used, the externals and interfaces for the API, a diagram describing the API environment, properties files that are used to describe both the connection that you want made and the interaction that you want performed, the tracing that's used in the API, a brief example showing the usage of the API, and then we'll talk a little bit about the functions supported by the API, the IMS Connect functions, and the functions within the API itself that are special or somewhat unique to the API. Let's move to slide number 5 now. So looking at the business value for the API, we'll talk about the target market. The target market is all those customers who either are currently using IMS Connect as a roll-your-own applications, or customers who would want to go ahead and use the API with roll-your-own applications. It's not appropriate for customers who are needing to use the complete functionality of the IMS TM Resource Adapter or IMS SOAP Gateway. The challenges addressed with the API are that it simplifies programming for roll-your-own applications that use IMS Connect. It provides a function internally that will generate the headers for IMS Connect messages. It will manage the protocols that are used by IMS Connect for communicating with client applications. And it also manages the sockets internally. It will open a socket whenever it needs one and send the information on the socket to IMS Connect and receive the response all under the covers. The solution statement for the API is that it provides a set of reusable profiles that are used to define the connections and types of interactions that you want performed using the API, and it provides a set of high-level and low-level methods for performing those interactions with IMS Connect. The business value statement for the API is that it simplifies the design, development, test, and maintenance of IMS Connect client applications written in both Java and C. Initially, the API will be made available as a Java API, but eventually later this year, it will also be made available as a C API. Slide 6, description and positioning. The API facilitates remote access to IMS transactions and commands, shielding the user from considerations for the IMS Connect protocol, the headers involved with the API, and with socket communications. It targets users who need to write and maintain roll-your-own applications and accomplishes the same tasks as can be accomplished through the IMS TM Resource Adapter and IMS SOAP Gateway, only it uses a slightly leaner implementation. It does not require a J2EE or JCA implementation, and it does not use a SOAP server as is required for SOAP Gateway. It allows different roll-your-own applications to use the same type of code for accessing IMS from Java applications. Although it doesn't use the J2EE and JCA directly, it does use the same paradigm for interactions. That is, that you have a connection factory class and connection and TM interaction interfaces through which you set up the interaction that you want and the connection that you want, and then you utilize those. And I'll go over that in a little bit more detail in a future slide. Slide number 7, prerequisites. This will be an IMS V10 SPE, and as such, a license for IMS V10 is required. It also requires the use of the IMS V10 integrated IMS Connect function and requires for the Java version that JDK or JRE for runtime 1.4.2 or higher be used. There are no hardware requirements for use of the API other than would be required for a normal Java application. And no tooling is required. You can create applications that utilize the API using whatever development environment you have. There's no special tooling required at this time. Slide number 8, design assumptions. In designing the API, our goal was to provide an API which allows you to use all of the existing functionality in IMS Connect that is available to roll your own client applications. It is TCP/IP only, which is the nature of IMS Connect Roll Your Own Applications, and the client is responsible for preparing the input data as expected by the IMS application. The client is also responsible for interpreting the output data returned by the IMS application, and in the C implementation, clients will be responsible for management of the memory required for the data structures used in the C implementation. The Java implementation initially is supported on Windows and System Z, and this is more a statement of the testing that will have been performed for the API in that Java should be able to run on a variety of different platforms. The C implementation will initially be supported only on Windows. Slide number 8, restrictions. The IMS Connect is intended to support existing IMS Connect function. New functions that were added after the start of development of the API have not been included or may not be included in the GA version. In addition, two-phase commit will definitely not be supported in the initial release of the API. In fact, there may be restrictions which would prevent 2PC from ever being feasible as a part of the API. SSL may or may not be supported in the initial release. If the API is running on System Z, there may not even be a need for SSL, but at this point in time, it's unknown whether SSL will be in the initial release. Cancel client ID will also probably not be in the initial release, and XML will not be supported in the initial release. Slide 10, externals. The major functionality from the user's point of view is that the IMS Connect API executes interactions with IMS Connect and shields the IMS client application developers from having to deal with the complexities of the IMS Connect headers and protocols and TCP/IP socket programming, and also it shields the client application developers from having to understand the natures of the different IMS Connect user exits. The IMS Connect user exits supported by the API are HWS SMPL0 and HWS SMPL1, with the default exit being HWS SMPL1. The IMS Connect client application developers are responsible for configuring the connection and TM interaction property files used by the API, and these are files which contain name value pairs. We'll talk about them more later, but you can use them to specify values which are specific to your environment for the different properties used by the connections and interactions in the API. Optional features for the API are SSL connections and API runtime tracing, which you can turn on or off in your application, and you can also set the level of tracing that you want accomplished by the API. Moving to slide number 11, we'll look at the interfaces for the API in a little bit more detail. Users may provide path names to customize files. The path names are specified by the client application based on your environment, so you can use either fully qualified or unqualified, whatever is supported by your operating system. And these are used to specify default values for an application for the different properties of a connection and TM interaction. As I mentioned earlier, we're using a similar design, what is used for J2EE and JCA connectors, being that we have connection factory, a connection factory class, which is used to obtain a connection object or connection interface, and that connection interface allows you to create an interaction from it, a TM interaction interface, And between those two, the connection interface and the TM interaction interface, you specify the target IMS Connect and IMS and the type of interaction you want performed. We have both low-level calls on the Java connection interface and high-level calls on the TM interaction interface. The low-level calls would include the connect, disconnect, send, and receive. And I have more information on this in the following slide about the different low-level calls. I won't go in detail over that information, but the connect call is used to open the physical TCP/IP socket connection between the application or the API running in the application and IMS Connect. This is a call that can be made explicitly by the client application, or that can be deferred and left up to the API to do during the processing of an execute method, which is the high-level call, which encompasses everything. Moving to slide number 12, the disconnect call and the send call are mentioned there. Again, you can use the disconnect call either explicitly or allow that to be done within the API during the execute method, or you can leave the disconnect call until the application calls so that you can reuse connections throughout the life of the application. The send call, although it is available, it's probably not something that you're going to want to use in your application. This allows you to send a raw byte array into IMS Connect, but if you're using the send call directly in your application, that implies that you're going to have to create the byte array and worry about assembling all of the IRM headers yourself. So it's probably not something that will be of much use by client applications. Moving on to slide 13, the receive call. The receive call may be something that will be of use by customers, and it will allow you to do a TCP/IP receive. It doesn't send anything to IMS Connect requesting that information be returned like a resume T-pipe does. It just simply does a receive on the TCP/IP socket that is underlying the connection interface. Slide number 14. There is one high-level call in the connection interface, and that's the load connection properties from file, which I have talked a little bit about earlier, in which case you have properties files, and you can have a number of different property files in your environment. And the properties files can contain any number of name value pairs for the properties in the connection, in this case, interface. You are unable to add properties to a connection interface. The properties in a connection interface are predefined, and so you can only have name value pairs for the existing properties in the connection interface. The properties files that we ship with the API contain default values for all of the existing properties of a connection interface, so you can use any of those or some of those depending on your needs. For instance, you may want to use the default values for the SSL properties, which is to not use SSL connections. And in that case, you can remove those from the property file that you load in and just load in a property file which has a host name and a port number that is specific to your installation. Also, the properties files that we ship with the unit contain numerous comments that explain what the different properties are and how they're used, what the values that you can specify for them are, and in the name of efficiency, you would want to strip those comments out of the properties files that you actually use in your application so that your property file used by your application just contains the name value pairs themselves, the name value pairs that you want to use. Moving to slide 15, we have the high-level call for the TM interaction interface, and that is the execute call. And this is the call where all of the work is done under the covers for you if you choose to go that route. The execute call will start off by looking at its connection object. There's a relationship between TM interactions and connections, and each TM interaction will have a connection associated with it by default. So it will look at that connection and determine if that connection is open. And if it is open, it will continue processing. If it's not open, it will go ahead and connect that connection object. Then it will assemble the byte array to be sent to IMS Connect, putting in the LLZZ value or values if appropriate and the transcode if appropriate, A transcode, of course, is required for a transaction if it's the first transaction of a conversational interaction or series of interactions, or if it's just a non-conversational transaction. Where it's not required if you are doing a subsequent iteration of a conversation, or if you're submitting an IMS command or an IMS connect command. Once it's assembled, the input byte array to be sent to IMS connect, it will send that byte array to IMS connect and then go into receive mode and wait for a response, assuming this is a send-receive interaction, which is the default interaction for execute. Once it's received the response, it will process the response and determine whether the response is a legitimate output response from IMS and IMS Connect, or if it's an error response, an RSM or request status message, which includes a return code and reason code, and perhaps an OTMA sense code and reason code, which give in more detail about the type of error that occurred. If an error has occurred, it will return an exception to the client application. If an error has not occurred, it will just return control to the client application, and the client application can, from there, retrieve the output from the output message and do whatever processing is necessary. Slide number 16 is this diagram of the API environment, and it just shows where the IMS Connect API fits in your overall environment, whether it's Windows or ZOS. So you'll have client applications, roll your own IMS Connect client applications that can be running either in Windows or ZOS. And these client applications will have access to instances of the IMS Connect API. You would include the jar file for the API in the class path of the client application, and from there be able to invoke the different methods and create interfaces that are available in the API. The API will also be able to load the connection and TM interaction attributes files, as we've discussed, and make the communications, the TCP/IP communications between the client application and IMS Connect. Slide number 17, we'll talk a little bit more about the properties files. The properties files are intended to contain default values for the connection interface and the TM interaction interface. There are two types of properties files supported, one for connection properties and one for TM interaction properties. The connection properties, as I've said, identify the target IMS connect, the type of connection, and SSL properties of the connection. And what we do is we actually have the same connection properties files used by connection factories as well as connection interfaces themselves. So what you can do is you can configure a connection factory to have a set of default values that can be used by perhaps many different applications, and then you would create a connection interface from that connection factory and either use those default values, or you could go ahead and customize the values in the connection interface itself. And you can customize either connection factories or connections using either the load properties method that we provide, or you can use the setter methods for individual properties depending on your needs. It should be pointed out that with connection properties, once you have opened a connection or the API has opened a connection for you and not disconnected it, you are unable to change the values of those properties. It just doesn't make sense to have a connection open to a given IMS connect and then on the fly try to change the host name of that connection, because the connection is already open. You would have to disconnect and make the change and reconnect, which is what is supported. If you try to change a connection property while the connection is open, you will get an exception which will end the execution of that setter method. TM interaction properties are a little different than connection properties. They are set up while the client application is controlled. They are only actually in use during the processing of the execute method. So in your client application, you can freely change TM interaction properties at any time, and those interaction properties will be used during the next execute method. Slide number 18 is another view of the types of things that the properties files can do. Again, on the connection properties side, you have properties which define the target IMS connect, the host name and port number. You have the SSL configuration properties, which include the SSL flag, which says that you want the connection to be SSL or not. You have the SSL encryption level, which would define whether you want no encryption on the data that's passed back and forth on the connection, weak encryption, or strong encryption. No encryption allows you, or none, as it's specified in the API, allows you to go ahead and use SSL for authentication purposes, but not incur the burden of the overhead of encryption on the actual data that gets passed back and forth on the SSL connection. And this is more useful if you're operating behind a firewall. You're also able to provide key store and trust store names and locations and the passwords associated with those for storage of certificates that are used with SSL. A couple of other properties used for connections are the client ID, which is an identifier for connections. Basically, it's used internally by IMS Connect. If you specify a client ID in your application, that client ID will be used and you'll know what it is. But there is also the option to not specify a client ID in the API. And if you do that, IMS Connect will generate a guaranteed unique client ID, but it will not pass that client ID back to the client application. So the client ID will not actually know what the client ID is for that connection. You're also able to specify the socket type for a connection, which is either transaction or persistent, the difference being that transaction sockets are disconnected after the completion of a transaction, whereas persistent sockets remain open. A transaction socket is closed automatically by IMS Connect and the API whenever a transaction completes, including the ACK or NACK of the response, if applicable, and at the conclusion of the complete conversation, if it's a conversational interaction. Then on the TM interaction property side, we have interaction-related properties such as the data store name, which identifies the target IMS Connect, commit mode and sync level, and the interaction type. We support a number of different interaction types in the API, including the send-receive, which we've already talked a little bit about. You can also specify send-only types of interactions, in which case you are just sending a request to IMS Connect and not getting back a response. There's also a resume T-type type of interaction. There is an end conversation interaction in which you are requesting that IMS end a conversation. So there are a number of different interaction types that are supported by the API. You have message routing properties such as a reroute name, and whether or not you want undeliverable messages rerouted or purged by IMS Connect and OTMA. You have security properties such as the RACF settings that are used by IMS Connect and OTMA. IMS Connect uses them for authentication of the user. IMS uses the RACF properties for authorization to ensure that the user is authorized to access any RACF protected resources needed by IMS to perform the interaction. There are a couple of timeouts associated with the API. One is the IMS Connect timeout, and that's the amount of time that IMS Connect is willing to wait for a response to be returned from OTMA after it has submitted a request to OTMA for execution, a transaction request. There's also an interaction timeout, which is the amount of time that the API is willing to wait for a response from IMS Connect. And the thing that you have to be careful with these two timeout properties is that the interaction timeout must always be larger than the IMS Connect timeout. The interaction timeout basically encompasses the IMS Connect timeout. So if you were to make it less than the IMS Connect timeout, essentially you would be hiding the IMS Connect timeout, so it would never be used. The IMS Connect timeout is sent in as the IRM timer value, which is used to override the default IMS Connect timeout value. We also have message encoding properties, such as the IMS Connect code page, and this allows you to use different code pages for your data depending on what is used by your IMS application. For instance, the default code page is code page 37 for US EBCDIC. You could also use 1252 for an ASCII code page, or you could use other code pages for other environments where for instance, you would have a non-English language support. We also have some response properties. The response includes LLL property, tells the API whether to expect LLL values in the returned messages. The reason we have this property, normally we can determine that from whether you're using the HWS SMPL0 or HWS SMPL1 user message exits, but if you were to create a different user message exit that uses the same structure as one of these two user message exits but a different identifier, we wouldn't know whether to include LLLL in our processing or not. So this value tells us if you choose to use a different user message exit identifier whether to expect the LLLL or not. And then we also have the ability for your application to request that an MFS mod named be returned by the IMS application. On slide number 19, I have a little bit of information about the tracing available for the Java implementation. In Java, we use the Java util logging package and provide four different levels of tracing available to your application. None, in which case there are no trace records written. Exception means that only exception messages will be written to the trace. Entry exit allows the API to write trace records whenever you enter or exit a method of significance. And then the internal trace does all of that, plus it provides additional information about what the API is doing, and most importantly, the send buffer and the receive buffer. At the bottom of this slide, you'll see an example of the output for the byte array that gets sent to IMS Connect. And then on the left side, it includes the hex values for the bytes, and on the right side, the human readable, and that works with both ASCII and EBCDIC, depending on the IMS Connect code page that you have specified. Moving to slide 20, a continuation of that internal trace level output, we decode the IRM for input messages and explain what the meaning of the fields is in the IRM. And as you can see, there are interpretations of the various IRM fields there listing the values that are taken from the byte array that gets sent into IMS Connect. Moving to slide 21, I'll just go over the usage of the API again. It's that J2EE JCA-like paradigm where you instantiate a connection factory and either configure the connection factory using the load connection factory properties from file or using individual property setter methods, or just use the default values that are available from the API for a connection factory and customize them at the connection level. But then you create a connection from the connection factory and again configure using the load connection properties from file or the individual property setter methods. Then from the connection, you create a TM interaction which you configure again using the load TM interaction properties file method or the TM interaction individual property setter methods. You would then create data as a one or two dimensional byte array or string and obtain a reference to the input message object from the TM interaction and set that input data in the input message object. The input message is used by the API in constructing the message to be sent to IMS Connect, but all you need to worry about is setting the actual data that goes into the message, and the rest of it will be taken care of by the API during the execute method. Once the execute method is completed, you obtain an output message reference and can get the response data and properties from the output message by using getter methods on that output message. Slide number 22 is a brief, simplified example of the code that would be involved in using the API, and it just goes through the same things that we've described where you create the connection factory, create the connection, create the TM interaction, and in this case I've both shown examples of loading the properties files as well as using the setter methods for setting the host name and port number and the client ID and then setting the IMS data store name on the TM interaction. It shows how you would instantiate a reference to the input message object and then set the data in that input message object, call execute, and then when execute returns, you would get the reference to the output message, and from that you could display the output using the getDataAsString method, for instance, on the output message. Then the first interaction, starting at line 13, was a start tran IVTNO IMS command invocation. And then starting at line 22, I set the tran code, and line 24 set the input data to do a display last one command using IVTNO, the IVTNO transaction, and then do the same thing. Set the input data on the input message, call execute, and then print the response using the output message, get data as string. You'll notice that with the second interaction, we already have references to the input and output message, so we just set the data on the input side and use the get data as string on the output side without having to get new copies of the input and output message. Moving to slide 23, the IMS connections supported. Obviously, we support IMS transactions and the OTMA-supported commands that we've just talked about. We also support the IMS connect ping command, which is a command that you can use to test the health of the target IMS connect. We support the RACF password change command, which allows you to change the RACF password in the IMS connect user message exit for the client ID that you have specified for that connection. We support both persistent and transaction sockets, as I mentioned earlier. We support the connect-generated client IDs by submitting a client ID of all blanks. Eventually, we will support SSL if it's not in the first release. We support the SMPL0 and HWS SMPL1 user message exits, which have the LLLL or not, depending on which exit you choose. The default is HWS SMPL1, and by the way, the bold values on this slide are the defaults, both internally in the API as well as in the properties files that are shipped with the API. We support the data store definitions so that you can specify the target IMS for your interaction. We support resume T-pipe processing options, single wait and single no wait, along with auto and no auto. The one thing to be careful with here, and this is talked about more in the speaker notes, is that with single wait and single no wait, you can use those with the internal ACK-NACK function that I'll talk about in a minute, whereas you cannot use auto and no auto with the internal ACK-NACK simply because the API with internal ACK is only able to return one output message at a time, and auto or no auto is designed to allow you to return multiple response messages. We support resume T-pipe alternate client ID, which allows you to retrieve asynchronous output for a different client ID than the client ID of the connection on which the resume T-pipe alternate client ID is being made. We support the L-term override name being submitted through IMS Connect so that it is put in the IOPCB when the transaction gets run in IMS. We support the return MFS mod name, which tells IMS that we would like the mod name returned in the message if it's available. We support commit modes commit then send, which is sometimes referred to as CM0, and send then commit, referred to as CM1. We support sync levels none and confirm, and the defaults for those two are commit mode 0 and sync level confirm. We support interaction types ACK and NACK if you're doing the ACK and NACK from your client. We support cancel timer, end conversation, receive, which again is just a receive of the information available on the socket, a resume T-pipe interaction with IMS Connect, send only with ACK, in which case IMS is asked to acknowledge receipt of a request, and send only with XCF order delivery, in which case XCF is guaranteeing that it will deliver messages in the order that they are received to IMS, and then the send-receive, which is the default interaction, which is used most of the time. So we support both purge undeliverable output and reroute undeliverable output, which are mutually exclusive. They both default to false, meaning that undeliverable output will be requeued. And if reroute undeliverable output is set to true, we allow you to specify the reroute name to the name of the T-pipe that you want the output requeued to. We support the RACF properties that you see there for authentication and authorization in IMS Connect and IMS respectively. We support the IMS Connect and interaction timeouts that I've talked about previously. The default value for the IMS Connect timeout is zero, meaning that you intend for the IMS Connect timeout value to be used, and there is no IRM timeout value furnished. And the interaction timeout default value is zero, meaning wait forever. We support the IMS Connect code page. See, code page 37 is the default, but you can specify a number of different code pages, and they will be used to encode and decode the byte arrays that are used with IMS Connect. And then we support both ASCII and EBCDIC. My last slide talks about the API functions, which are specific to the API. I mentioned the client ACK or NAC versus the API internal ACK. We allow the client to specify whether they want to ACK or NAC messages themselves, that is, encode in the client application, or have the API acknowledge the response messages automatically during the execute method. If you're using the API internal ACK, the API has no criteria for differentiating between when it should do an ACK or an NAC, so it always acknowledges messages. Whereas if you're doing client ACK NAC, you can make a decision yourself as to whether to ACK or NAC a message. We support the LLZ and TRAN code being provided either by the client application or by the API. And then we support four different types of input and output messages, byte arrays, arrays of byte arrays, strings, or arrays of strings. The byte array can be used for either single segment or multiple segment, in which case you must specify an LLZZ to delineate the segments. Arrays of byte arrays can be used for either single segment or multi-segment. If you're specifying single segment in an array of byte arrays, you would only populate the first byte array element of that array of byte arrays. And then you can use the string or the array of strings, but if you're using the string or the array of strings, you cannot specify the LLZZ in the message or the transcode for that matter, because you would not be able to always specify the correct length using a character that can be represented as a string. So that concludes my portion of the presentation. If you have any questions, there will be a question time after this presentation, but we have also provided our email addresses in case you want to contact us after the presentation. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dave Cameron, who is the lead developer for IMS Connect, and he'll be talking about the recent updates to IMS Connect. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Hello, I'm Dave Cameron, an IMS Connect developer with the IBM Silicon Valley Lab. I will be presenting the version 10 IMS Connect updates. Slide 26. These are the topics that will be covered for the IMS Connect version 10 updates. Slide 27. OTMA degraded system monitoring. IMS version 10 introduces OTMA new protocol messages to inform its clients, like IMS Connect and MQ Series Bridge, of the IMS system health. Initially, OTMA will monitor and report on the TIB usage, also known as flood protection. OTMA will send the 3-Charlie protocol status messages when a client first connects, anytime there is a change in status, and also every 60 seconds as a heartbeat. The 3-Charlie protocol messages provide the overall OTMA status and detailed information for any warning or severe states. IMS Connect provides the OTMA status in an expanded XIBDS for the user message exits. These exits can use this information to aid in message routing decisions. There's also a new Event 45 issued for the Event Recorder exit, HWS TECL0, for each change in status. Vendor tools can use this to aid their routing decisions. Slide 28, transaction expiration. IMS version 10 introduces the capability for customers to request a time value to expire unprocessed transactions. Once expired, these transactions will be deleted before being scheduled, thus reducing processing costs. IMS checks for the transaction expiration at various points of processing. IMS version 10 provides transaction expiration for only OTMA transactions and at the message level. IMS version 11 extends this support to non-OTMA transactions and also implements system-level transaction expiration. Slide 29. IMS Connect clients request transaction expiration by setting IRM F1 TRN EXP on the input transaction. Another option is to modify the user message exit. IMS Connect uses the execution timeout value from the IRM timer or the timeout value from the IMS Connect configuration file. IMS Connect calculates the expiration time based on the current time plus the execution timeout value. This way, IMS Connect client timeout and the OTMA transaction expiration will more closely match. Slide 30, cancel client ID option. IMS Connect clients can encounter duplicate client ID errors when attempting to reconnect after a network failure. It can take IMS Connect an unacceptable length of time to be informed that the client has failed. The old sessions may be in receive state, waiting for the TCP/IP keep alive to detect the problem, or in con state, waiting for either a message from OTMA or a timeout. The new cancel client ID option is specified on the first request from the client. This is when the client ID is determined for the session. IMS Connect checks for the existence of the same client ID on this port. If one already exists and cancel client ID was requested, then IMS Connect will clean up the previous session before proceeding with this new session. Slide 31, performance APAR PK57574. IMS OTMA sends response messages to IMS Connect specifying the target client ID. IMS Connect must search through all of the client IDs chained by socket addresses to match that client ID. This becomes more CPU intensive as the number of clients to be searched increases. This APAR implements a client ID hash table for each port to access the clients directly by client ID when matching the client ID sent by OTMA. This can greatly reduce the CPU required to determine the correct target socket. This savings is dependent upon the number of active clients and the transaction rates. Slide 32, TCP/IP keep-alive. TCP/IP will send keep-alive packets after a period of inactivity on a socket to determine if the partner is still healthy. This can determine when a partner has terminated abruptly. Many customers specify a large TCP/IP keep-alive interval to reduce the network overhead of keep-alive packets. This may prevent IMS Connect from being informed of client problems in a timely manner. IMS Connect introduces a new port definition in the configuration file that allows customers to override the TCP/IP keep-alive interval for sockets on specific ports. A port can only be defined once in either the port ID, SSL port, or port parameters. An example of the configuration statements is provided in the speaker notes. Slide 33, MAC size. IMS Connect uses the first 4 bytes of input messages from clients to determine the total size of the message. There is an internal size limit of 10 megabytes for input messages. IMS Connect introduces a new MAC size parameter on the HWS statement in the configuration file that will override the internal default value. Customers may specify a larger or smaller value to limit the size of input messages. Slide 34, mixed case passwords. IMS Connect provides support for RACF mixed case passwords with 3 options. The default is determined the mixed case password option from RACF. This allows customers to change the RACF setting and IMS Connect will automatically pick it up. The mixed case password can be specified using the PSWD MC parameter on the HWS statement in the configuration file or change dynamically with the update member command. Slide 35, BPE INI 00. IMS Connect has required customers to update the program properties table to add HWS HWS 00. The PPT supplied by ZOS already includes an entry for BPE INI 00. IMS Connect is enhanced to allow customers to use BPE INI 00 thus removing the requirement to update the PPT. The IMS Connect JCL must be updated to specify BPE INI 00. Slide 36, TMRA Socket Reconnect. The IMS TM Resource Adapter connections to IMS Connect are managed by the WAS connection pool. When network problems are encountered or IMS Connect is brought down, WAS may not be aware that the connections are no longer good. TMRA may encounter many stale connections from the connection pool. To minimize the impact, TMRA will throw an exception on the first stale connection encountered and sets an internal flag. Subsequent connections are compared with the time the initial stale connection was discovered and reconnected if necessary. That concludes the IMS Connect version 10 updates. Jack Yuan, a senior OTMA developer and TM architect, will present the IMS version 10 synchronous callout. Jack?
Thank you, Dave. In the coming slides, I would like to introduce you a major version 10 SPE which we deliver at the end of 2008 for IMS synchronous call function through IMS Connect. Please turn to slide 38. IMS version 10 synchronous call function enhanced the current asynchronous IMS call support to allow IMS application to call out synchronously and wait for the response to come back. Using this programming style, the IMS application program can initiate direct communication with other external application programs and receive the response in the same IMS transaction instance. Slide 39. This diagram shows that IMS application can do call out to a user-written IMS client, IMS Connect client, or a WebSphere EJB NDB using IMS TM resource adapter, or a web service provider using IMS SOAP gateway. Slide 40. The iCall function is only supported using AIB TDI interface in IMS TM runtime environments for IFP, MPP, BMP, JMP, and JBP regions. Slide 41. In this slide, we'd like to show you the detail about this AIB TDR interface. We can see there are a lot of information that will help synchronous callout to send to the external application. For example, in the AIB TDR interface, we need to specify 8 bytes of OTMA descriptor name, which will be used to define a destination, for example, which IMS Connect and which TPI of that IMS Connect. We also need you to specify the length of the request data. Also, when respond come back, a field called AIBOAUSE will contain the length of the response data. Slide 42. OTMA descriptor, which was introduced in version 10, play a very important role for the synchronous call message. The OTMA descriptor, type D descriptor specifically, externalize the routing definition and specification for call message without IMS user exit. It is read and initialized at IMS startup time. In version 11, we even provide OTMA type 2 command to dynamically create, update, or query the type D OTMA descriptor for you. And the command can also dynamically change the timeout value in the descriptor. Slide 43. In this slide, we show you a message flow from one end to another end. For example, step one is the roll your own client application issue a resume TPI request with the needed information. Step two, I call send out from the application. Step three, OTMA break the message into 32K segment. Step four, ICON combine the data and send to the clients. Step 5, client acts the ICON message. Step 6, client send the synchronous call response to IMS Connect. Step 7, IMS Connect break the message into 32K segment. Step 8, OTMA combine the data and return to the ICON running in a dependent region. Step 9, ICON then get the data in the response buffer and the AIB interface, the field code AIB OAUSC, has the length of the response data return. Now turn to slide 44. The synchronous call message that we send out to the external application can also be rejected through three different kinds of NAC. One is called NAC stop, which means the client application or IMS Connect reject the message and terminate resume TPI request. The second NAC is called NAC continue. That means reject the ICON message but continue retrieving the subsequent ICON message on the resume TPI. The last NAC is called NAC pause, which terminate this resume TPI and keep the message in the TPI. Slide 45. And we also enhance IMS command so that you can display your synchronous call message status through display active region. Slide 46. You can also issue display team member TPI and display team member TPI sync to see the detailed ICON message status in the TPI. You can also issue P stop or stop region FDOM, stop team member TPI, stop OTMA to clear the wait state of the region to clear the ICON message. Slide 47, which is the last slide of our presentation. We list the software requirements and tooling information for you. Finally, on behalf of IMS team, we thank you for listening, and now I will hand it back to the operator.
Thank you so much, speakers. Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we get to take your questions, we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will conduct the live Q&A session with the presenters. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer today's questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Now, please listen to all the options before making your selection. Our first question for today, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. And if it was low, press star 3. We'll pause to assemble the responses. For our second question, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference, if it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. And if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll pause. Our third question, what version of IMS are you currently on? If you're on version 10, press star 1. If you're on version 9, press star 2. If you're on version 8, press star 3. And if you're on version 7, press star 4. Our fourth question, for those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? If you plan to install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. If you are interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years, press star 2. And if you're not interested in IMS 10 at this time, press star 3. And for our fifth and final question, we do hope that you enjoyed the teleconference today, so please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1, and if no, press star 2. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our survey. We thank you all so much for your participation, and now let's move on to taking your questions. To ask your question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. But just keep in mind, if you're joining on a speakerphone, to make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And again, that is star 1 for questions, and I'll go ahead and turn it back to our speakers while we wait for our first question. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll take a question from Kent Holden with ATT.
Yes, when is the WebSphere apps for App Service 7 going to be supported?
I would have to get an answer to that from Haley Fung, who is the lead for the TM resource adapter. I'm afraid I'm just not up to date on when that support is going to be available, if it's not already.
I'm wondering, could you send us send Kevin an email address so that when Kevin get the response, he will send back to you. Thank you.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask a question. Well, as a final reminder to the audience, it is star 1 to ask a question, and we'll go ahead and pause to give everyone a final opportunity.
This is Jack Yuan. I'd just like to share another good news to you guys, and we would like to invite you to join our brand new IMS development application development forum on IBM DevelopWorks. In this forum, you can ask questions, generate discussion, share interesting techniques, and more. You can reach the forum by visiting the URL www.ibm.com/developerworks/forums. And thank you.
And we'll hear again from Kent Holden.
So earlier you had a slide that mentioned that the 32K segmentation limit is going to be lifted. So does that mean that there are no longer any restrictions on the outbound request sizes coming from the application? And if so, what does the actual receiving app on the other end see? Does it still present itself as segmented chunks or a continuous byte data stream?
That's for synchronous callout only. The messages from the IMS application on the request going out and the message received by the client that gets the request, similarly the client response coming back and the IMS application receiving the response on the iCall, all of those messages are a blob. They're whatever size you want and not restricted to 32K. They don't go through the IMS message queue, so they don't have to be segmented. Internally, for communication purposes, we segment them. But from the application point of view, both in the IMS and the client application for IMS Connect, they get them as one continuous byte stream. The length is also included with it as an indication, but not necessarily part of the message. That's not required any longer for the LLZZ, which segmenting used to require.
that also true if requests are initiated inbound through IMS Connect or through any OTMA client that's out there today?
The restriction or the lifting of the 32K limit is only for synchronous callout. So it's only from IMS initiated iCalls doing synchronous callout outbound. Any other IMS transactions still have the 32K limitation and segmenting requirements.
And then what about on the timeouts that was alluded to earlier? How is that actually implemented from, I guess, from an IMS scheduling and queuing perspective? So is this something that has to be timed out before the transaction is actually scheduled within the IMS queues and it's being held externally within the OTMA boundaries, or?
Okay, sorry, this is the transaction expiration?
Yes.
Yes, the transaction expiration, when a message is first received by OTMA, is checked for expiration at that point, and then it's enqueued to the message queue, it's checked then. When it's actually going to be scheduled, to get unique in the dependent region, it will be checked again at that point. And at any of those times, if it's expired, it will not be scheduled and run.
So even if it is already enqueued, there's still another check there before the transaction is scheduled and run.
On the get unique to the application dependent region, when it's going to pull it off the queue, it's checked before being given to the application.
And what's actually logged to indicate that TRAN did time out and was removed from scheduling?
There are log records that are written. I think it's, Jack, it's the 67 log records?
That's correct. 6701 that indicate every iCall that we deliver through IMS OTMA, and 67.0 indicate there is a timeout happened.
Yeah, sorry, this is the transaction expiration.
Transaction expiration, whenever it expired, we Dave, you're right, we lost 67.0.
Okay. All right, thank you.
We have no further questions at this time, so I'll turn the conference back to our speakers for closing or additional remarks. Gentlemen, did you have anything else to add?
Hey, Dave, do you want to say something?
So if there's any further questions, feel free to forward emails to any of the email addresses that are included in the presentation.
This is Jack Yu, and I really thank you for coming to this session. And IMS Connect is really a strategic connection base for our future TM transaction and connection. Feel free to send us question or email, and our focal point for IMS Connect is Dave Cameron. Dave is our technical lead for IMS Connect, and thank you very much.
And this is Kevin Flanagan. I'd also like to thank you for joining us this morning. And I just wanted to point out that we did put rather extensive speaker notes in with the presentations, so they provide additional details that we didn't have time to get to in the presentations. So if that doesn't provide enough detail, again, like Jack said, please feel free to contact us. Our email messages are on the slides, and we would look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again.
Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation.